Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Two-Headed Game Master. I'm Cosmo, the first head.
And I'm Dane, the card head.
Two-Headed Game Master is a podcast about writing, designing, running, and playing role-playing games, where we discuss our favorite hobby, share our thoughts with you, and play some games sometimes. Talking about
friggin'
game
today.
Design. Well, no, we're not playing, but we are talking game design.
So, what we're talking about today are the drama cards from Torg. It was our first legit role-playing game that we experienced and, like, actually did in Game Master and whatever. Mm-hmm. It stands for the other role-playing game.
Yeah.
It's very old school.
Very 80s.
Very 80s, very action. Pretty fucking dope. And one of the dopest things that we think about constantly, they added cards to the pen and paper role-playing experience. Not just like playing cards, but, you know,
there is a deck of so-called drama cards.
Drama cards.
That come with the core Torg...
Rules.
Yeah, the core Torg role-playing kit has a deck of cards, which I imagine might be pretty hard to get now, because ours is a vintage copy.
It was pretty hard to get for us, too.
But a PDF that just has the cards in, like, numbered order, you could get that and then just, you know, use a random number
proxies or whatever.
Proxies,
right.
Cut them out.
Truth. Okay. So what exactly are these cards?
What are the drama cards? What the fuck is a drama card?
There was two main functions to these drama cards. They gave randomness to the encounter. They drew conflict lines and, like, had initiative built into them. And they had these, like, a little advantages, disadvantages mechanic.
Mm-hmm.
It is...
Which follows... That's interesting.
Gloomhaven.
Following pretty heavily... Oh. Well, I was thinking the Radiance and Inspiration
yes.
thing.
Yeah.
The last episode that we did, if y'all remember... we talked about rewarding essentially specific types of behavior, different
yes.
specific role playing, rewarding it. These cards, they had things that were like, hey, if you do this during this round of the encounter,
yes, which is their second function,
mm-hmm.
right? They acted like what we just talked about in the last episode. They added sometimes it was a bonus to a roll, just like. Attack roll, here's a +3.
Yeah.
Right? But they also had, like, oh, the players are... They suffer... The heroes, not the players. The heroes suffer a setback, right? And then, like, you know, there's rules about what the setbacks are, and it's basically just, like, the game master says, okay, something bad happens, mm-hmm. right? Like, more enemies show up, or the weather turns, whatever, right? It still is adding that randomness to the game, right? But they can also be played and, like, used for +3 to my roll or et cetera. There's some other examples we'll get into, right? So those are the two main functions, right? They also are just, like, an extra hit of dopamine. It's something more to manage. Like, you have a hand when you start and, like, you can draw new cards, right? Like
in the same way players like rolling more dice.
Mm-hmm.
Like, here's another cool thing. You had a little hand to these guys. Not like a, you know, you weren't playing like Magic the Gathering inside of a role-playing game.
Mm-hmm.
But you had a couple of these alongside your character sheet. It was an extra thing that you could...
Right. It's something that you owned and could use as a resource, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, you get to... like, theorize, like, okay, I want to save this card for later, but, like, this is an okay card right now, right? Like, this is my really good card, and I'm going to save that.
Mm-hmm.
So you have a hand of cards, and at the beginning of every encounter, and then the beginning of every round in the encounter, like, a new card, a Game Master card is flipped over,
mm-hmm.
right? And Torg does that by, they're all the same card, but there's a Game Master side and a player side.
Also, in Torg, the Game Master is specifically called the Director.
Yes.
And these are meant to be scene direction for an action movie, essentially.
Right, and like, because yeah, that's what they, you know, say in the rule book is like, this is like how you simulate an action movie. Mm-hmm. The specific example they use is like talking about Indiana Jones. Indiana Jones like goes through a whole fucking truckload of Nazis, no problem.
Yeah.
Oh, but this one guy in the airfield's got his fucking number.
Yeah.
Right.
Big. Mean dude, and now he has to have a fist fight with him, which essentially he loses.
Yeah,
like,
but it's dramatic, right? Like, he just kicked, you know, six guys' ass, and then like now he's getting beat up from moment to moment.
Yeah,
right. So like that's what it's trying to do, is simulate that, which is like, you know, the randomness, like a little prompt of the randomness, right? So the mechanics, every player has their own hands.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the beginning of an encounter, you flip a card, and then every subsequent round, right, the villains and the players have their turn, and then a new round, and you flip another card, right, which changes the initiative. You could get two bad draws, players-wise, where it says the villains go twice each round, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not, you know, switching back and forth.
What's that one called, the Surge?
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, they all got fun, you know, flavor text names.
Right, like you can get Villains Surge. You know,
the going gets tough,
mm-hmm.
right? Oh, villains act first, and the heroes suffer a setback.
Mm-hmm. So now, as the director, the start of the round, before you, like, establish initiative order, because the card is changing initiative order, you set all that. One, the villains are going first. Heroes suffer a setback. And that could be, you know... Yeah, it starts to rain.
Yeah.
That's not necessarily a setback for everybody, but maybe a player was, you know, sighting in their sniper rifle for the shot. It's raining now.
Now you got drops on your rifle.
Yeah. You're no longer scoped in for that shot.
Mm.
You've lost your, like, aiming in bonus from the previous round. Sorry. Yeah. Setback.
Mm-hmm. Something like that, right? So, and, like, that's a lot like Gloomhaven, I mentioned earlier, where the, like, you know, all this card play simulates, not necessarily simulates, but gives prompts, right? And I think that's, like, the main word of the day is prompts. And, you know, we're going to use that a lot more later, right? So how do players use this, you know, card mechanic, right? So they have a hand of cards. And when they're in a drama sequence, or, you know, a encounter, they, every time it's their turn, they get to play a card into their pool,
mm-hmm.
right? So they have a hand, and then they have, like, an activation pool. So kind of like, you know, playing mana in Magic,
mm-hmm.
you can't tap it right away.
Right. It's got to be played into the pool. So you're like, I'm putting this in my pool for future use. And then on the next round, if you've got something in your pool that would help, you can use it.
You can play that.
Yeah.
And one of the great things it does, and, like, we kind of used... We used the vernacular, and it didn't really come into a mechanic in Afterlife. Our original role-playing setting and mechanics.
Mm-hmm.
Are, like, approved actions.
Yeah.
We use them in Afterlife of just, like, these are, like, cool things that you can do that, like, have a set of rules associated with them.
Yeah. Special things, and mostly they were combat focused, and they were mm-hmm. things that were, like, in addition to a basic attack.
Yeah.
Because another thing that informed that was both of us playing a fuckload of Darkest Dungeon in the, like, 2014 to 2017 range.
Yes.
And in that, like, nobody has just a basic attack. None of your characters have just, like,
slash
regular attack. Everyone has a couple of offensive abilities, a couple of support abilities, defensive abilities, stuff like that. And we were trying to make that interesting. These cards kind of do that.
Right. So every card has an approved action list. And it goes by, like, the round card, not the cards in the player's hand or their pool. But so, like, you flip over a card, it tells you the initiative, tells you if there's any setbacks or inspiration, and we just did a whole episode on inspiration. Not that type of inspiration, but, like, a bonus. So, like, you know, the heroes have up, which I believe means they get two actions before the villains, but don't quote me on that. But stuff like that.
I think so. I thought that was called Surge, though, when one team gets to move twice.
I think the card is called Surge, but, yeah. like, the
up. Yeah, yeah. I thought Heroes Up just meant they go first.
Well, no, because they're on the left side. Yeah, the left side goes first. So, anyways, the approved actions. For example, this card that we're looking at, that we're discussing what up means. Approved actions are any. So what that means for the players, if they do any action, they get to draw another card. Mm-hmm. Right? Sometimes there's like real strict approved actions, like this one where it says maneuver or test.
Yeah.
Which are non-combat actions.
Right. Which incentivizes you to not necessarily just attack. Like, oh, I shoot my gun.
Mm-hmm.
Well, but the approved actions for this round are maneuver. So instead of shoot my gun, I'm going to do a physical movement action, and I'm going to try and like gain better position and forego an attack until next round because of the bonus I'm going to get for movement.
Because I get an extra card that I can use later.
Yeah.
Right? Or the test, which is a test of willpower. It's basically like, you sure you guys want to fight us?
Yeah.
We're pretty strong. We're going to kill you.
And now we're doing a willpower, like intimidation test against their, you know, a morale, essentially. A morale test in like, wargaming terms.
And whether or not the test succeeds, player gets to draw a new card.
Mm-hmm. And that new card is going to have new stuff on it that is going to bonus you in other ways.
Right. So, like, that's kind of like the card economy is you get new cards by doing approved actions in that round, and the approved actions change each round, right? As well as initiative. So it's just a cool way to kind of set the scene, right? It gives like some prompts for the game master, you know, like the player's hero setback, it starts raining, right? Like, it's not something the game master thought of, but like, oh, I have to assess a setback? What's it gonna be? It could be something as trivial as weather. Or as, you know, devastating as, like, the bridge you are fighting on is collapsed. So now we're fighting on a collapsed bridge. And you guys, you know, have to hold on. So, yeah. I mean, that's what drama cards are. They got a couple uses. You know, they add to the randomness of encounters. They assess initiative. And then the players can use them for their bonuses, right? You know, oh, I got a +3 to maneuver and, like, dexterity rolls.
Yeah.
So I dodge around the incoming fire. Boom, I'm going to use my +3.
Yeah.
Right, kind of what we were talking about with, like, inspiration. Right. This is a kind of another system. Torg also has a possibility points which is more traditional inspiration system.
That's not additional what we're talking dice about. That you get to add on to rolls in order to creep up your result. But
that's not what we're talking about.
These are more narrative prompting.
Narrative prompting. You know, there it is again, that prompt. Right. So in all good role-playing games, these cards are suggestions, and you don't have to use them.
Right.
Right? But it is cool to use them and work them into your game, right? So, like, using these cards, what Cosmo said earlier is, like, it's the movie tension, like, mechanic, right? It adds a bit of that, well, something unexpected happens. You know, think back to the Indiana Jones example that is in the Torg rulebook of just like the heroes are doing great, they're kicking ass, and then here comes a mini boss, right? Get ready because the heroes are going to take some hits now, right? And me as the director, as called in Torg, I didn't really plan for this, but like, this is a great prompt for me. This is a time for, you know, the players to get put on the back foot.
Yeah.
Right? That's a good idea, cards.
Thank you, cards. I hadn't thought of that before.
I hadn't thought. How can I start hurting the players? Oh, well, the card tells me to.
Yeah.
Right? It's that prompt for role play, right? Like, they have the prompts of, like, you know, setbacks or inspiration where, like, there's a bonus to one side.
Yeah.
And they also have those approved actions. Right, which is, I think that's probably why, well, I mean, maybe we're just that good. But if we're not that good, this is probably a real pillar of our, like, role-playing
it,
of, like...
It really is, but I remember thinking that, like, using the cards was a little bit fiddly,
mm-hmm.
and the philosophy of the cards is something we've just kind of carried over into most of the rest of our game design.
But it helps...
And a lot of the stuff we talked about 2 weeks ago in the Radiance and Inspiration episode, it's got a lot of the same energy in it. And I know we talked about how Torg has possibility points,
right,
which are
is more
essentially inspiration. But the way we use that stuff is in the service of the same sort of drama that these cards are meant to evoke and push.
Mm. I was
although these what these cards do that system doesn't. I mean, I'll give you that opportunity in a moment.
I was going to... Okay, yeah.
He made a nasty gesture, folks. The thing that doesn't do that these cards do... is specifically advantage the enemy side of things.
Yeah.
Specifically give
the
setbacks
villains
to the players, yeah. and advantages or buffs or bonuses to the villains in the scene.
Yeah.
And you call it a scene in Torg, not an encounter.
Yes. So yes, that is something this does, that other side of the coin of villains can also have, you know, inspiration and kind of fourth wall directory being like, you know what? I think it's time for the villains to kick some ass. What I was going to say, you know,
stroking ourselves.
Is the, like, you can always do something, and if your character's not a fighter and you're in a fight, you don't have to fight. You can do a maneuver. You can do a trick. You can be like, hey, look at me, and then duck down undercover so your teammates who are fighters, they can have an open shot, right? Because I think we are really good at that as players, where our characters always have something to do, and it might not be the just like straight dungeon crawl answer of like, oh, I attack,
mm-hmm.
right? When we play, like, not pacifists, but, like, you know, non-fighters, you know, what would help our team here? And I think that came from these Torg cards of giving us
these
approved actions.
Having that, like, specific type of action as a prompt and, like, hey, it's, that's what's up. That's what's hot this encounter, or this round.
This round,
actually... doing a trick.
Mm-hmm.
That's what's hot.
Right? Or a taunt.
Mm-hmm. Taunt, that's great. Taunt intimidation, that's really good.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, and it doesn't mean everyone, because if everyone on the hero side did this, well then, you know, nothing moves forward that turn.
Mm-hmm.
But one or two people are like, hey, yo, over here.
Right, like, I'm out of range, my gun doesn't work, or like, mm-hmm. you know, I'm only a melee guy and I'm out of range, but like, I could taunt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You taunt, you get a bonus for doing it, first of all. You get another card, which mm-hmm. is going to have something else on it. And you also, you know, you're directly feeding into everyone's, like, shared experience of a dramatic scene.
Mm-hmm. And again, these are just suggestions, right? Like, if there's a round that says approved actions are intimidation and taunt, you just might be like, you know what, my character still attacks, and like, I don't get to draw a card, but like, my character's in range, my character has a good opportunity to attack, or my character would just attack, like, they're not going to talk. I think going back to Torg is too young for this one, but like, it perfectly gets at like Free Fire, like that movie.
Mm.
Like, this is what
Torg is too old.
Oh, did I say too young?
Yeah.
I did.
Free Fire
is too young. Yeah. Torg is too old. It was written before Free Fire came out.
Yes. But let's briefly talk about that. Free Fire is a very fun and, you know, compact 90-minute movie about one gunfight in a warehouse where a couple of different parties come to do an arms deal. Someone starts shooting. Everything goes wrong. The entire movie is essentially real time from that point. Is the, you know, like 60 minutes it takes for a bunch of people to shoot each other up in an abandoned part of town before finally the cops show up.
Mm.
And in that, a terrific amount of drama happens at this like micro level of, you know, tricks. And everyone's shooting the whole time, obviously. So that's like a foregone thing. Mm-hmm. It's like, yeah, we're attacking.
Have an opportunity, you shoot.
Yeah. And then you reload. And then you talk to your teammates. You try and formulate plans. You try and intimidate the other team. You try and trick the other team.
Mm.
You
maneuver.
Them. You maneuver around. You try and sneak over here. Oh, they shoot at you. That maneuver didn't work, but someone else is over here doing something else. Free Fire is a very good movie. Very funny. Very just like action. Balls to the wall. It takes like 20 minutes for... Well, they shoot some guns before they start shooting at each other. But the first shot in anger is like 20 minutes into the movie.
Yeah.
And then it's just shootout for the rest of the movie. But one tight, compact, really claustrophobic shootout where a bunch of other stuff happens besides just like, oh, I attack. Mm-hmm. I avoid being attacked.
Yeah. Right. And like, so that's kind of exactly what these cards are trying to get at is... Yes, you're in a combat, but there are so many different ways
that you can
act
in combat.
In combat, right? It doesn't have to be just like, oh, I shoot until they're all dead.
Yeah.
Right? So, yeah.
That's... Because I think what they understood in the design of Torg, and something that, you know, like every game master will experience, at some point you're going to like put an encounter in front of your players, and it's going to... start out a little more dynamic, whatever, but it's going to end up with just like they attack, you attack, a little bit of attrition, and that attrition is probably going to be weighted in favor of the players, and eventually that last dice will take away the last bit of hit points from the last bad guy, and the fight will be over, and you'll be like, okay, thank fuck that's over. That wasn't very interesting. I wish I had designed that encounter a little bit differently. These cards inject interesting differentness into what would otherwise be like, okay, it's my turn, yeah. I attack.
Because they could absolutely change the prompts of the card, could actually absolutely change the direction of the encounter. So like, oh, we're headed towards a shootout where it's just going to be a slugfest. And then, approved action is intimidation. And your bard gets up there and is like, all right, I'm going to intimidate them. And they, like, start singing a song about, you know, the hero's, you know, accolades.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, you know what? The villain side is like, oh.
And I don't know if we want this fight anymore.
This comes directly from the book I'm listening to right now. I've listened to it before. I'm re-listening to, I forgot what the series is called, but the book is The Theft of Two Swords.
Oh, the...
The Rhaenyra Chronicles or something like that. Anyways, it starts out huge, big, you know, heap big role-playing energy where they get robbed immediately. Like, the first encounter is a robbing, a highway robbery, and, like, you know, the player characters, the main characters... The Rhaenyra gang, which is two people, they're like, yeah, okay, you could rob us, but like, you know, we don't want to be robbed. And then like, there's a lot of discourse, and then they drop the name Rhaenyra, and like, the robbers are like, wait a second, did you guys say Rhaenyra? Like,
oh, you're those guys.
I was told you guys are hard as dick, and so like, we're just, you know what? We're not robbing you anymore,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, you guys are too hard.
Yeah, bye guys.
Like, sorry. let us clear this brush for you, mm-hmm. right?
And it might be tough to arrive at that naturally, but if you're using something like this drama deck, where the prompt to try something like that is presented as more in favor this round than just hit with your sword.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the outcome is in everyone's mind. Like, well, if approved actions this turn are taunt or intimidate. All right, I'm going to try a taunt and intimidate, whatever. The game master is also thinking, like, since those are the approved actions, what are my responses going to be to successful this action? When otherwise they might be thinking, well, yeah, like, you guys are already in a fight. We're not going to do... They're not inclined to listen to you. You're already in a fight. Right, you can't start a... you can't start a... an intimidation.
Right, like, attempt. You can't start a dialogue because we're already...
Because we already have swords drawn. Right, like, we're already in a thing. But this is putting it in, like... This is a dramatic moment in the thing.
Mm-hmm. Where it's like, before we kill each other, hold on! Right?
Yeah.
Here's my attempt, right, at getting out of this situation before we take a bunch of damage.
Right.
Which, like, is always kind of on the table, but, like, once, or at least in my experience, once that gets going, players kind of throw out...
They throw out a lot of the other things they could do besides what's my attack action.
Yeah. It's a way to kind of, like, change the direction, right? Like, oh, we're in a fight now, so mm-hmm. all I'm thinking about is an attack, and then a card comes along, and it's like, wait a second. Ooh, idea.
Yeah.
Light bulb.
Yeah.
We don't have to attack. And, like, and sure, yeah, it, like, might not succeed.
Like,
it might not
some
succeed.
Some characters still need to, like, keep attacking, probably. But...
And it might not succeed. But, like, you know, maybe you have a bonus that, like, you know, lets you, essentially gives you advantage where it lets you re-roll or fail a roll.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, okay, well, if I got two rolls at this, yeah, sure, I'm going to say, why are we fighting, comrades? We should be on the same team. And maybe I can turn a couple of them.
Yeah. Maybe we can just mix it up. And now a thing that was just like, oh, yeah, this is a combat encounter. Because a role-playing game is not a... You know, like a linear first-person shooter video game.
Yeah.
It is a shared narrative experience where every encounter could go usually a number of different ways. While combat is often the focus and a lot of times what happens anyway, because it's fun, mm-hmm. not because it's an uninspired thing or unimaginative, whatever. Like, combat's fun. But just, like, more ways to interact with the game itself during combat and prompted, right.
That prompted
and rewarded.
Exactly. So that's one way to use the cards.
Yep. But now, then there's these other ones.
We haven't talked about these cards because they're special.
Mm-hmm.
So these, we said before that these drama cards in Torg, they have a game master side and a player side.
Yep.
So there's these special cards that have both or two game master sides.
Essentially, yeah.
Now, what this is it's like a fourth wall breaker, but it is collaborative storytelling.
Yeah. If you have this one where it's both, I like, let's do this.
Sure.
Should we do do the other ones first?
Why don't we do, the other ones first.
Okay.
So there's a type of card that has, and, like, these are color-coded.
Yeah. You know. So the gold, you flip them upside down. So the gold side usually has the direction for, like, who goes first, who's on the back foot.
Bonuses,
what actions are hot this round. Mm-hmm. And then the silver side is the player side.
That, like, if you say, I am activating this card as a player, I get +3, like, to my...
This is a player one rally. Mm-hmm. All players may discard and immediately refill their hands up to the, you know, the max.
Hand size, right?
But sometimes that player side is also a gold game master banner. And that's one where, like, if you play it, you're kind of dipping a toe in, like, the narrative control of the adventure.
So this
fourth
one,
wall breaking.
Yes.
Essentially.
So the one that you have in your midst right now.
So this one, connection. So you play this. You know
as a,
someone
as
in the
a
area
player
who can aid you. I play this as a player. You know someone in the area who can aid you. Now the game master, because of the rules and the structure of Torg, they have to honor this.
Mm-hmm.
So this is something you play when, like, you know, you're in the market. You know, you've escaped the Nazis and you're on the run.
You're looking for someone who can hide you, maybe, right?
Play this connection. You get to skip the looking around and the
well, you don't actually get to skip it.
Right.
But what it does in the rules is wise, and maybe your game master says, like, okay, we can skip this.
Yeah.
This is something we talk about all the time about, like, pulling from a player's backstory. So, like, this connection card says, reiterates the fact that the characters that you're playing had a whole life before you started playing them. Like, before the movie started,
they had a real life guy.
Right? They knew people.
Yeah.
They had a brother who's maybe not involved at all, or, like, a cousin, mm-hmm. or, like, you know, a whatever, friendly shopkeeper, doesn't matter.
Yeah. This is like, so connection is a great example. This is like, Indiana Jones again. This is like his friend Sala in Egypt. It's like, I know a guy. I'm going to go talk to Sala.
Right.
And Sala is like, oh yeah, I'm one of the diggers. The Nazis have hired every excavator in the city. They're working on this big thing out in the desert.
And I can get you in.
And I can get you in because I'm already hired. I work there. And yeah, connection. You play connection.
Mm.
And as a player, you can kind of write that a little bit.
Yeah.
Or, you know, be like, hey, I play connection. Game master, you have to give me connection.
And
or, but I think the cooler version of that is the player plays connection and says what they have.
Right, like, you know, I play my connection. And then, like, to the other players, like, yeah, you know, I think I know a guy in this marketplace. Let's go find him.
Yeah.
Right? And then the game master's like, okay, you know, who is this person? And then the player gets to role play a little bit and be like,
they get to do a little bit of, like, micro game mastering where they're now, they're inventing a shop with the guy who runs it and how they know them. And now the party is here. And then, you know,
then it goes back to the game master.
Yeah, quick, like, hockey play. You pass it back to the game master. And the game master, though, is to a degree obligated to run with what you've
They have to be friendly and are going to aid the players, right? You know, because that's what the connection card does. Right, so.
And in good role-playing, you know, you'd ask a couple questions. Be like, okay, so, you know, how did you meet him? What's your relationship? What do you know about
each other?
Or
her.
Or her, yeah, them. Whatever. Oh, fuck.
Right?
It's too long. There's a great line for that from a song.
And it might not be like, oh, yes, sir, tell me how I can help you. It might be like, you know, the game master takes it back and says, okay, you know, this person knows you're trustworthy. And it's like, all right, I'll help you for money, or I'll help you if you do this.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'll get you out of this jam.
Yeah. It's not an automatic, like,
success
jump the gun or, like, jump a level,
right?
You know, skip a grade type of thing. It's, you know, you've solved one problem kind of automatically. Mm. Where do we go? Well, I know a guy. Okay.
Yeah.
But in order for him to get you into the dig, you're probably going to have to, like, gather some stuff, a disguise or something, you know.
Yeah, or it could be the just, like, you know, skip the, like, oh, you guys are lost in the swamp trying to get across the swamp. Connection card.
Yeah.
Okay, as the game master's like, okay, who would you possibly know that's in the swamp? She's like, oh, well, like, you know, back in the day I grew up with this guy and, like, you know, he loved to fuck around in the swamp. He's probably still here. And I'm like, okay. And then, like, you guys are sitting in the swamp lost and you guys are fucked and, like, oh, we're running out of food. Oh, who comes through the mist? your old childhood friend.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, oh, fucking...
I didn't expect to see you here.
Fucking, you know, Nine Fingers? What you guys doing in the swamp? Mm. Oh, we're lost. Well, I got you. I can lead you out of this, bitch.
And that's such a, like... That's such a movie thing.
Yeah.
You know? Like... Connection's very cool. Like, in Fellowship of the Rings, in the movie, when Eowyn, you don't see her at first, and she's speaking Elvish, so you don't know. But, yeah. like, suddenly, you know, Aragorn's looking, he's right, trying to find the medicine in the woods, and suddenly a sword is at his throat.
Ranger caught off his guard.
And he looks up, and then the next scene is, like, oh, it's Eowyn, and this magical elf, a connection. That is going to help us through. Like, we weren't sure how we were going to get through this. Now here's help. You play the card. You're spending a resource that you have a limited amount of as a player. But it's also just like an interesting way to share the narrative, to share control over the narrative.
Create something together.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So the other one that is like a fourth wall breaky is the alertness, card. And that one is basically, there is something here that my character missed. Please tell me what it is.
Yeah.
I don't think
it's not in this stack, but yeah. And that's one of the ones where it sort of breaks the fourth wall a little bit, because you're saying like, you know, we already searched this area.
And it doesn't have to be like, oh, we searched it and failed. You could have searched it and succeeded, but like maybe like it didn't just catch your eye.
Yeah.
So like, oh, you guys rifle through a bunch of letters in the desk.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't read them. It's like, oh, it's not gold. All right, okay, well, we're done with this room, right? If the alertness card is active, the game master could be like, well, hold on.
Hang on.
You're
on
not
that
done.
Alertness, you're not done. You recognize a name on one of the letters. And now it's a prompt on the Game Master side to feed you something new. And you're like, you're not really sure where to go. Alertness. You notice an otherwise unseen item, character, or clue. Set this card out facing the GM. So you put this out. Basically, that's what the card tells you.
And it doesn't
to
have to happen right away.
Yeah. You put it out, you say, alertness. The Game Master's like, okay, got you. You continue to play. The Game Master is going to give you something in response to the alertness. Maybe you find a secret passage. You find a name on a letter.
You could.
You find, you know, a clue.
Or you interrogate a prisoner and, like, you don't get anything out of them because you rolled kind of bad, or you just weren't asking the right questions.
And now you're back at the pub trying to, like, well, what do we do next?
What do we do now? Oh.
Play my alertness.
You think back to that interview and, like...
You remember something he said.
You remember something he said. And here's the clue. Here's the piece that fits into the puzzle.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, now you got a little... You got something to go on, basically, right? It is a... So, like, this card is a... Pretty much a straight-up petition to the Game Master and be like, I'm kind of lost to your Game Master.
Mm-hmm.
Help me out.
And the Game Master's job in response to the alertness card is to, you know, see it and be like, okay, here is a signpost that is pointing in a direction this way.
Yeah.
And in this way is sort of the tacit promise that the adventure continues this way.
Right. And we've talked about this concept before, and like this is where it came from. Like this is why
this
we
doesn't
think
mechanicalize it. Or the way we've done it, we haven't had like a mechanical, we haven't had
we
a
have
piece
a
of paper
card,
that
right?
tells you to do this, but this is how we like try to design adventures all the time.
Mm-hmm. And like, oh, as a player, I'm lost. Game Master, I would like to do a history roll. Like, can I connect the dots, or like a mind roll? Like, what dots need connecting here?
Yeah.
Let me
don't know.
Because I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, my character might.
Yeah.
Like, let's see what they remember.
And that's another, like, sort of on the board thing that I know we've said something to this effect before, is that, like, your character lives in this world and knows things that you don't. And sometimes it is okay to, like, ask the game master that, and for the game master to tell you, oh, yeah, like, because of who you are, because of where you came from, because of the world that you live in this fantasy world, there is maybe a dot that your character could connect that you, the player...
Like, no role required. Yeah. But, like, your character would connect this.
Yes. And the cool thing about these drama cards are that they facilitate it explicitly in a way where, you know, if you were a less experienced game master, or maybe playing with a group of people who weren't quite in sync as far as, like, their styles, whatever, this card sort of builds that bridge for you and asks both the player and the game master to think about it.
Yeah. Then we come to the third type of special card. The subplot card. Now, there's a bunch of different subplots, but, you know, they are essentially the same. They work essentially the same, right? Where, unlike the alertness and connection, where it's kind of like breaking the fourth wall, these are extremely, like, in character, in atmosphere, like, how they work, right? So there's a couple of them. And we don't have to go through them all one by one.
Mm-hmm.
But, so, like, I listed them all out here. So, like, the martyr card is what it sounds like. The martyr, right? Yeah. Like, it is essentially saying, I am going to sacrifice myself to basically skip a dramatic moment.
Yeah.
Right? Like, the movie sacrifice of, like...
Right. Like, a boss fight is not going to happen because I'm going to be like... I'm going to drive the car away before the team can get into it,
right,
and just crash into him. And it's probably going to kill me.
And it's not for, like, defeating the boss. It is for, like, avoiding the disaster.
Yeah.
Right? So, like, oh, we're in the final chamber of a dungeon and we're getting our ass kicked. We've gotten in way too deep.
The best...
Darkest Dungeon?
I wasn't thinking Darkest Dungeon, actually. I was thinking Fury Road.
Yeah, okay.
When Nux...
Yeah, yeah.
When Rictus is on the hood of the fucking war rig, and they're trying to... They just killed a Morton Joe, or they're about to kill a Morton Joe. It's all happening, like, at the same time, yeah. Rictus is trying to, like, rip the manifold off the top of the engine, the intake, and Nux is, like, the last one left on the war rig, and then Nux... through the windshield is like, witness me.
Right.
And crashes the war rig, kills himself, blows everything up, and blocks the pass so that everyone else who made it onto the Giga Horse, they get away.
Mm-hmm.
That's, you know, so you play Martyr, you play the subplot Martyr card, and then you get to, like, say that, basically.
Yeah.
Like, I do this. And that comes with the incredibly dramatic thing of killing your player character. And so now...
There's no rules to escape. You are dead. But you get a free pass to save the party, essentially, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, obviously there's some trust involved, because, like, you could obviously litigate the card rule and be like... Bleh. And, like, there's some penalties for not actually dying if you play the martyr card, but we're not getting into that. The point is, it's cool as fuck.
Yeah.
Right?
And they're all cool. And I do, like, we don't have to get that, but, like, Mistaken Identity.
Mm.
Mistaken Identity subplot. Really great. So you can, like, essentially, you'd be like, oh, yeah, I'm pretending as an official. They've mistaken me because I look like whatever. But then also, you risk anger from everyone who would be mad at that person.
Mm-hmm.
Real. Nemesis.
Well, like out there let's after. Not go too fast.
Okay.
Right, and, like, you can just sneak it because
yeah.
I read it. So the Mistaken Identity one is something that I have personally done, and Avatar did it best, right? Like, if you're looking for, like, you know, any of these story tropes or, you know, subplots,
yeah,
Avatar is going to have an example. Avatar the Last Airbender. But the session I ran, and I know we've talked about it on... the cast before, is our players roll up to a town and they're like, you just murdered somebody last night.
Yes.
Right? You look like the guy who fucking was seen murdering.
You look like the guy. We're pretty sure we know it's you. Mistaken identity.
And it's like, no, I didn't do it. It's like, okay, we don't really believe you, but, like, we'll give you a chance.
Yeah. Prove it wasn't you.
You know, prove it.
And, yeah, the Avatar Day episode of Last Airbender is a terrific example of that. You could use that mistaken identity, because maybe it's not a wanted murderer.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's somebody else.
Well, maybe it's like what you said. Is like they're, they mistake you as, like, the sergeant.
They do this shit in Star Wars all the time.
Oh, yeah.
Or, like, Indiana Jones. You know, like, you put on a uniform and just kind of act like it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, mistaken identity. They think you're an officer.
Yeah.
And you can turn that into something, but then, number one, you risk discovery.
Mm-hmm.
And you also risk, if you're pretending as, like, you know, the son of the local baron to get free drinks, well, someone who hates the local baron might attack you, and they're like, hang on, I'm not actually him.
Yeah.
You risk getting to a lot of trouble that way.
What is that movie example I'm thinking of where, like, the character who's going to pretend as, like, the bad guy or whatever gets recognized as the bad guy, and it's like, I can't go because, like, this guy's
there's
mad.
There's a TV bit. There's a Brooklyn Nine-Nine bit.
Maybe it's the Brooklyn
where
Nine-Nine.
Where Rosa is supposed to go undercover in prison.
That's the one I'm thinking of.
I accidentally yanked this up. Rosa's supposed to go undercover in prison. One of the inmates immediately recognizes her as the detective who put her in jail.
Yes.
And so they have to switch to Amy.
Yes. Well, maybe that's not what exactly. That's close enough.
I mean, that's
enough.
A good one. Mistaken that's close identity. Enough.
Yes.
Another one is Nemesis.
So the Nemesis one is super fucking dope.
Yeah. There is somewhere in the adventure someone against whom the character has a grudge or who has a grudge against the character. That's terrific, just like story fodder for the game master.
Yeah. And so, like, so these subplots, you know, how they work, they don't derail the campaign.
Oh god, there's so many.
There's a lot. They add to the story, to the adventure. So, and well, I mean, you know, you could play it either way, I guess, right? Like, if you just want to, like, go off and have six sessions and, like, forget the main story and go off in six sessions on a fucking subplot, sure. Your prerogative.
It's a subplot. And there's also no hard and fast rules about how long a campaign of a role-playing game is meant to go, how many adventures it can or can't fit into it.
But they are meant to fit into the story. So
They are prompts that are meant to be rolled into what is already going on.
So, like, the Nemesis one is, I'm trying to think of a good movie example.
The romance and the Nemesis one are basically two sides of the
opposites,
same coin. They're,
yeah.
They're essentially the same thing. Romance is just,
well,
it's a romantic thing.
I would think they're a little bit different. I'll tell you why later. But the Nemesis one, so, fuck. I know there's a perfect movie example, I just can't quite think of it. But, like, the Nemesis doesn't just, like, come out of nowhere and it's like, oh, I mean, it could. But what they're trying to get at is your character's Nemesis. Say, you know, Cosmo's character, John, right? Their Nemesis is working for the bad guys and, like, they recognize each other. And it's like, yeah, I'm on this side because you're on the other side and, like, I fucking hate you, brah.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, that's why I'm a bad guy right now.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, we're going to have to... You and John and whoever are going to have to deal with this.
Yeah.
Like,
you
we're know,
gonna
maybe
have
it's
a showdown
kill each
about
other,
it.
Right? Maybe it's a coming to terms. It doesn't have to end in blood.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, you guys are... Your Nemesis is on the opposite side. It's on the villain side of things because you are on the hero side of things.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And it can fit into your story.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be... Random assassin attacks the party.
Right.
It could be. But, like, that's more of, like, a case of mistaken identity.
Almost, yeah.
That's like an example is, like, they think you're the guy who killed, like, the crew boss of the criminal underground. So the criminal underground is coming out of you. And, like, it's totally unrelated. It's mistaken identity.
Yeah.
Right? But a Nemesis hates the character and will do anything to be on the opposite side of the character, even do bad stuff.
Right. But I would say alignment with the, you know, whoever the big bads are is not necessarily. I was thinking about the Afterlife campaign that you're running.
Mm-hmm.
In this campaign, which Dane has been running for a while, there's a character who's a sort of like smuggler boss type guy.
Yeah.
And it wouldn't be crazy for us to, you know, be like, oh, we're working with this. We've been working with this smuggler character for a while. We have some deals with him. It get us stuff for our encampment, and sometimes we do a job for him. It wouldn't be crazy if we met another NPC who, like, hated that guy.
Right, and because you guys are with him, I'm against you.
Right, and not necessarily because they're associated with the big, bad, evil, mind-control wizard cult that we're fighting as the main enemies of the campaign. We'd have a nemesis sort of situation, because nemesis is,
yeah,
like, it can be loosely applied to, like, who is actually, sure, the nemesis. It just spices things
up. I still think that applies and is in along the lines of what I was saying, is it's still relevant to the story, because, like, you need something from Weird Ball,
say. Yes, yeah.
And this guy is in your way. He's only in your way because of your association with Weird Ball, so you can't advance the story until this is dealt with.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, loosey-goosey. I mean, I could think of several arguments against.
Yeah.
But the point is, it's an interesting subplot, right? It's not a new plot.
It's a subplot. And I would say, without getting into in-depth all the rest of these, they function similarly.
I think we should do romance, because you said romance and nemesis are kind of like the same. I don't think that's true. The romance card, at least in the rule book of Torg, is not just, oh, I have a side piece and it's like consensual and it's good and like we both love each other, because that's fucking boring.
Oh, no, yeah.
The romance subplot, like, is drama filled, Romeo and Juliet.
It's like Indiana Jones again. In Raiders, when he goes to Marion's bar, they're like, oh yeah, that is a romantic connection, a romantic subplot, but like, she's fucking mad at him when he shows up, and the only reason she agrees to help him go with him is because also the same night Nazis come looking for the same thing that Indy came looking for, and she doesn't have a home anymore, so we better get a fucking payout out of this. But the only reason he went there in the first place is because the romantic subplot card, essentially.
Yeah. Right. So the romance subplots shouldn't be just like, oh yeah, you're sweet on this other character and they're sweet on you, and like, you guys hook up sometimes when you're in town.
Yeah.
That's not a subplot.
That's the most boring way to use it. It's like, oh, romance. You player character and you player character, you're crushing on each other now. That's not the way it's meant to be.
Like a love triangle. Maybe two player characters are crushing on the same NPC, right? That's drama. Mm-hmm. That's a subplot.
That's a romance. Yeah.
Right? So, yes. So romance is one. It's a subplot when there's drama involved. It's not just like a player character is hooking up with an NPC who likes it. There's a reason they can't be together. You got to prove yourself to the love interest.
There's
family.
There's a reason why you're not together anymore.
They hate you, but you still love them. Something like that, right? And so, yeah, the other ones, personal stake. That one's extremely obvious. We champion that all the time.
We want that to always be a thing,
right?
It's kind of similar why are your to players nemesis here as well.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, oh, you recognize that officer, that Nazi officer is the Nazi officer that burned my village.
Right.
I've got a personal stake in this, and it's going to
affect
influence
my play,
the like, way I behave.
I'm
going
to go fucking balls out when I see him and, like, ruin stealth because, like, I saw him, I got a chance to kill him. I'm going to go try to kill
him. Right, and now the mission suddenly comes second.
Mm-hmm. Right. So true identity is like mistaken identity, but like not necessarily opposite, but just like a player character is lying about who they truly are.
Mm-hmm.
Could be to the detriment of the party,
mm-hmm.
or it could be like, you know, I'm the long lost prince and didn't know it.
Mm-hmm.
But it also is more fun if like they are, well, in terms of afterlife, is like, I'm a secret mandate agent working against the party.
Yeah.
Like, I'm here monitoring the party, making sure they're not getting too close, right? And like, oh, the bridge is out because, like, you know, when nobody was looking, I fucking blew it up,
mm-hmm.
or something like that.
Suspicion. Kind
suspicion
of vague.
Is a lot. Well, it's a lot like the mistaken identity,
yeah.
again, where it's just kind of like
it injects distrust.
It could be an NPC that is suspicious of a player character. It could be player characters are suspicious of an NPC player.
Mm-hmm.
Whether or not that's warranted, up to the group. One of the weaker ones, right?
I would say, like, but it's a good segue into the last little chunk of this episode, because
mm-hmm.
the point of it is just that it is a dramatic prompt, and it is a
yes.
little bit of the more weak and the less interesting ones, but you might play it to your own detriment for
yeah.
the sake of drama. You know, you might play the suspicion card, not necessarily saying that, like, oh, I suspect. You might play the suspicion card to spice things up and be like, oh, yeah, we were, you know, passing as, like, this crew of smugglers.
Right.
But now...
Remember when the cops, like, almost busted us?
Right.
Who fucking ratted?
Yeah.
Right? Like, who's the rat?
And now, suddenly, we're not having a good time anymore. Everyone's pointing fingers at each other, and we are having a good time as players at the table. But...
Right.
Suddenly you've just, like, inserted some drama, and it's not necessarily to help anything move forward. I mean, obviously you're going to move forward out of it in one direction or another, but...
Right, it adds to, like, the coolness factor and, like, the storytelling, right? So, like, these cards affect the game independently of roles.
Yes.
Right? You, in Tor, you play a card, and it's established, like... There's no role that says, oh, you succeed.
Right. If you had it in your hand and it was pooled...
This is something we're going to have to deal
play
with.
Play it. Yeah.
And it's extremely fun. It's a prompt. It's a, you know, it's like a writing prompt where it's like, you know, finish this story. Here's the first line.
Yeah.
Right. And so, like, this can be extremely useful for, you know, the GM, whereas, like, they don't have to come up with every little thing. The players tell you what they want, slash, like, by playing the cards, like, I want a connection. And this could be the rest of the session, but, like, I'm playing connection, so, like, let's go on that. And then the game master's like, okay, I got an NPC that could be your connection, and, like, boom, now I can help you guys out without, like, you know, trying to railroad you,
yeah.
because you brought it to me.
Yeah.
Prompts. Key word of the episode.
Prompts. Independent of a role, kicks ass. It can take a load off the GM by, you know, you can create a situation very easily as a game master where you're not sure how they're going to get out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And you can trust that your players are going to present you with an interesting solution. And hopefully, and oftentimes they will. But also, you know, maybe it's like, I didn't write it, and I'm not even sure what happens after this.
Mm-hmm.
And these cards can really take that load off.
Yeah.
By prompting you, and you're like, okay, well, the card says this, how do I fit this? And instead of trying to come up with something from whole cloth, from nothing, you're prompted in a direction. That's really nice sometimes as a game master. And it's,
yeah.
you know, why we want our players to be as involved as they possibly can, is so that they help kind of, you know, push and drive the story in whatever direction is funnest for them. These cards, they're a really great tool for that.
Mm-hmm. And so I think we're end with, if you don't have these Torg cards, doesn't mean you can't use the lessons they taught you.
Nope.
Or us. So as a player, if you want a subplot ask for it. Yeah. Be like, Game Master.
Game Master, I want a subplot, please.
I would like a romance subplot where there's a love triangle. Mm-hmm. Or, like, I want to be in love with somebody. Or,
and the way you do it is not really like that. You don't obviously raise your hand and do it that way. But, like, we have a character in the campaign that you're running who has a girlfriend in the campaign. And we've used that.
Well, I mean, that romance isn't a subplot. I have put the love interest in danger to... Right.
But that's, you know, that's an acceptable use of the card, yes. I would say.
Yeah.
Is, you know, because it influences which thing they're going to choose to do if their love interest is in danger. Mm-hmm. So the romance subplot is fully at play.
It's in plot.
Yeah.
As you will.
Yeah. Boy, we talked a lot.
But they're cool. It was. We tried to explain a whole mechanic that has like pages and pages of of explanation.
And so apply it to like
drama cards in Torg.
Yep.
They are a mechanic in Torg that serve a couple functions.
They're the initiative mechanic.
They give bonuses at random, right? And obviously you could count cards, but whatever. So they give prompts to, the hero's side suffers this, the villain's side suffers this, etc. Mm-hmm. Right? You know, some randomness that the game master doesn't have to think of because it's on the card. Players can also use the cards as little bonuses, you know, like inspiration, like the episode we were just talking in, where it's like, oh, I have a card I can play, you know, +3 to perception and mind rolls.
Yeah.
Boom. Right? And it's like an extra little, you know, thing to manage where it's like you got a hand and you can play cards, you get to draw cards on certain actions and stuff like that. So it's just like another thing to get your player, keep your players involved and interested in being like, okay, here's something cool that I can manage. I'm obviously going to try to min-max the fuck out of it. So, like, I got to save this card. It's too good to play now. But, like, oh, shit. Nope, that's this moment. I got to play the card.
Right.
So, using the cards, it adds a little bit of that movie tension, right? You know, that randomness of, like, all of a sudden the heroes are on the back foot. They were kicking ass, and now they're in the back foot because something happens that the card says. Or, you know, the opposite. The villains were kicking the hero's ass, and, like, all of a sudden, oop, heroes get to go twice. Fuck yeah, this is where we turn the combat around.
Right. And that's... It feels fucking good. We haven't played Torg in a while, but I remember how cool that is. When you get it as... And it also sucks, but in a fun, dramatic way, when the bad guys get it.
And it can also change the direction of the story, you know, with the special cards, right? You have a couple fourth wall breakers that's basically the player petitioning the game masters, like, please add this into the story.
Mm-hmm. Or like, tell us a secret thing.
Something that my character knows that I doesn't. Tell me something my character knows that I don't.
Yeah.
And then there's the subplot cards, which, like, really do change the story. You know, add to that collaborative storytelling where it's like, okay... I play the mistaken identity card. So, not necessarily me, but there is a mistaken identity somewhere involved in the story. We might mistake an NPC for somebody, or NPCs might mistake us for somebody.
Yeah.
Right? Where it just, like, it doesn't derail the story where it's like, okay, you know, branching paths, like, we're not going to go after the big bad now, but, like, in build up to the big bad, maybe a personal nemesis of a character is working for the big bad just because the player character is on the hero side, and so they're like, let me at the player character, I'm gonna kill him, so I'm gonna do a bunch of bad shit. And they're fucking cool, right? Like, having that
I was gonna prompt. Say something I forgot. I just remembered part of the reason why I thought, like, nemesis and romantic interest, whatever, that they're kind of basically the same thing, and they could be twisted in either direction. I was thinking of the new She-Ra show.
Yeah.
And Catra.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean, okay, I'm on board.
Nemesis. Yeah, Nemesis is for sure. I mean, 100% Nemesis is at first, and then it gets a little muddy, and then, like, yeah, but they're gay.
Yeah. You know, the Nemesis could... The Nemesis and romance card could function the same, where the subplot is the love interest hates your guts because, like, you know, you did them wrong, or they think you did them wrong.
Right.
And then, like...
Turning a nemesis into that, your girlfriend, or your girlfriend is now your nemesis, your ex is now your nemesis. This
same, same.
Fucking choice, drama, terrific, great stuff.
Cool as fuck.
Yeah. Sorry, I interrupted the recap.
Well, I mean, we were just talking about how it's cool as fuck, and it's cool as fuck.
Cool as fuck.
To have these prompts where the game masters don't have to come up with everything. The players can add their touch onto things.
Right. So, I guess, conclusion...
I think that's going to do it.
We recommend at least investigating this as a thing, because it's pretty rad.
Yeah.
That'll do it, I think, for this episode of Two Headed Game Master. If you like our stuff, head on over to twohgm.com.
Where you can find all the things. It's really hot in here, so like, you know, Afterlife, go buy it on drivethroughrpg.com.
Mm-hmm. Join our Patreon.
Become a patron, get access to the Discord where we do special events. There's also some other stuff on 2HGM.com, like, you know, dungeon worksheets and, you know, things, and fucking Marco's banging down the door.
Dog!
It's
fine.
Yeah. Thanks to the Burning Saviors for the use of their song Pontilla's Finest for the intro and outro of our song.
Show.
Wait. Yep. Help.
And we'll see y'all next time.
Help.